K540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King in Orlando, in Turkey's Taurus Mountain. So many things could have gone wrong as rescuers tried to bring a cave explorer back to the surface from 3,000 feet underground. Instead, everything went right as Mark Dickey emerged from the cave on a stretcher about 4 hours ago.
It is amazing to be above ground again. I was underground for far longer than ever expected with an unexpected medical issue.
Carlos Lau is a friend of Dickey's and a cave rescue instructor, and he says the three-day rescue effort was nothing short of amazing.
It blows my mind how they could do it so fast, and it just was a lot of teamwork separating the cave into the seven segments, the different teams, just one handing them right to the other. That was just precision work.
President Biden is on his way back to Washington from his Asia trip after a stop in Anchorage to mark 22 years since the 9/11 attacks. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
The president, returning from Asia, marked this solemn day alongside service members in Anchorage, Alaska.
Each of those precious lives stolen too soon when evil attacked.
It is rare for a U.S. president to spend 9/11 far from the three crash sites.
The search for an escaped killer has entered its second week in Pennsylvania. Danilo Cavalcante was seen on security video over the weekend, then disappeared again. U.S. Marshals Supervisory Deputy Robert Clark.
This is a manhunt, and all that means to us is that it's a longer fugitive investigation with more resources.
And that includes $25,000 in reward money for information leading to his arrest. Hurricane Lee wasn't a threat to the U.S., until it was. Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Warren.
More of the U.S. now in the cone. It will be weakening as it moves north, but parts of Massachusetts, including Boston, and even parts of Rhode Island in the cone.
New England is on the extreme left side of that cone for Saturday. The worst of the storm is to the right. And hurricanes are only part of what has been an expensive and deadly year for natural disasters here in the U.S. More from CBS's Matt Piper.
There's still 4 months to go, but already NOAA says there have been 23 extreme weather events in the U.S. that cost at least $1 billion this year through August. The previous record, 22 events, was set back in 2020, and this year's count does not yet include Tropical Storm Hillary or a drought that struck the South and Midwest. So far, this year's disasters have cost $58 billion and claimed at least 253 people's lives.
On Wall Street, the Dow gained 87 points. Today, the NASDAQ up 156. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Waukesha water bills will be going up as the city shifts to Lake Michigan water. Officials predict a 45% increase in water bills over the next 4 years. The transition to lake water begins this week and has come with significant expenses. Initial bills for Waukesha's new water are due next month. A fire that forced people out of a Southside Milwaukee apartment complex this morning started outside the building. Firefighters were called to 21st Street and Mitchell at around 3 a.m. Everyone inside was able to get out, and the Red Cross is assisting 10 people. A COVID-related scam is giving the feds a reason to issue a warning. The FTC has issued a warning about a new scam targeting Medicare beneficiaries involving fake offers for free COVID tests through phone, web, and TV ads. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens.
Today I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend Truman McGee.
From an environmentally friendly perspective, The fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I'm a serial strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic Sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Safety of transporting volatile substances that must be kept at extremely low temperatures when shipped.
That is good news.
And finally, the Biden administration this week moved to impose a permanent ban on oil drilling across millions of acres of pristine Alaskan wilderness. The conservation action does not affect the controversial Willow Project due to a court judgment. In a separate announcement, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland moved to cancel all Trump-era drilling leases that had been permitted in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and restored the refuge's decades-long drilling ban.
Protections to be restored to ANWR.
Yep.
Excellent news. We'll take it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I come back to this. You know, I call every September 11th for Congress to open up what was shown to members to get them to vote to go into Iraq. And I think we need to renew that every year. I think we need to push for that. I want to know what was shown to our elected officials that got them to go, yeah, we need to be making this turn into Iraq instead of where we should have, at least I think, maintained our focus. But here to share some thoughts on the anniversary of 9/11 and some of the thoughts post 9/11, I have asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come talk with us. Career military man, spent years traipsing around through this, so I think his perspective important on this day. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, Rick. I always enjoy your show, brother.
So I want to get your thoughts on 9/11. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will tell you that I remember where I was when those towers fell, when the Pentagon was attacked. I was actually at Fort Polk, Louisiana. Now, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, but we had taken a battalion down to Fort Polk, and we were training them up and getting them ready for Kosovo. And I will never forget when I was stopped at a checkpoint where one of my NCOs said, sir, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. And we were like, wow, that's horrible. You know, a plane crashed, probably lots of death. It was very, very, you know, it was horrible to hear.
Yeah. What a terrible pilot.
Yeah. We just like continued on with our mission. And it wasn't very long afterwards. I come right back through there. And then the same sergeant said, sir, a second plane has hit the tower and one has hit the Pentagon. We're under attack. And I will never forget, because when you are in the box, and that's what it's called down at Fort Polk, Louisiana, you are pretty much away from anything and everything. And at that point, we were all like dying for information. We wanted to know because, you know, now that we were under attack, this was a big deal. Yeah. So I found a
You know, who's the enemy?
He hooked up inside of his Humvee. and we watched the towers fall. And I said, this is going to change our lives. And it absolutely did. And from that moment on, it was go, 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 go. And I mean, it wasn't very long. We had troops in, you know, we had Osama bin Laden held up in the Tora Bora Mountains, and we should have killed him there. And then all of a sudden we pulled back because we needed to invade Iraq. And once again, you know, weapons of mass destruction, there wasn't any, you know, so, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that are struggling. We lost a lot of good men and women. It's, you know, September the 11th will be in our memory for the rest of our lives. And a lot come from that.
And especially people like you who spent years engaging in, you know, for most people, you know, I think, you know, after 9/11, well, our patriotic duty, as I remember George Bush, you know, asking us, was to go shopping. But you actually, you know, you blood, sweat, and tears into this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, but that's what we did. I mean, I was a combat soldier. So, you know, be honest with you, I can remember when we were loading up to go and we literally looked at each other and was like, this is our Super Bowl. You know, you're a combat soldier. You train every day for combat. And now it's time to put it to use. And we went and, you know, we lost a lot of good people. We're forever, you know, affected by it. I mean, I got post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, anybody, you cannot live over there where mortars and rockets and you're getting into firefights and I've been in two explosions. I mean, you know, you will never forget that. And it will always be with you, there's very few combat units out there that have an experienced loss. I will tell you that I'm a combat engineer officer. And I, you know, ever since, you know, 9/11 happened and everybody started deploying, you know, our jobs was to find the IEDs. And usually we found them underneath our vehicles. And, you know, I tell people, you will not find an engineer unit today in the United States Army that doesn't have soldiers that are missing legs and arms. They stay in the military. They pass the ability to stay in. And literally, they pop off their legs. And, you know, I mean, it is what it is.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest.
Well, you know, it's a bad thing that they lost, you know, arms and legs. But, you know, the fact that they still want to stay side by side with their brothers and sisters, even if it means going back to combat. I know lots of guys that were walking patrols in Iraq and Afghanistan with a false leg.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, obviously from that moment forward, it's been politicians lining up to take photos with soldiers and wrapping themselves in the flag and I mean, especially our Republican friends. So when you look at what Tommy Tuberville is doing in the Senate, you know, blocking all these nominations, and we know why he's doing it. It has nothing to do really with the religious, you know, abortion stuff. It has everything to do with hoping Trump comes back into office and is able to, you know, appoint who patronize, you know, do the patronage appointments that they want. I'm curious, when you look at this, what do you see?
Well, first and foremost, I see somebody who's never had the guts to pick up a rifle and man a post, and he's trying to literally hurt our men and women in uniform. And we're talking, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, Space Force, all of this. You know, what he is doing right now, he's blocking the promotions of over 300 officers. And by the end of this year, it's going to be double that. And understand that what that does is that places our nation in jeopardy. Think about a general officer and the requirements that it takes to be a general officer. And when a general officer decides to retire or move on to another position, there's always another person that's a general officer that is ready and able to move in and assume the duties and responsibilities of that role.
Right.
What Tommy Tuberville is doing right now is he has got all of that on a halt. So if a general leaves a position, there's nobody right now in the line to move in and take that role. So what means is that you may have somebody that has to step up to the plate and occupy that position. but he may or she may not be qualified to do that job. And when you have people that aren't qualified to do that job, you can't guarantee that they can do the job correctly. And if they can't do the job correctly, it will affect soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, all across the military in a very negative way. Tommy Tuberville is absolutely wrong with what he is doing. And when this is over with, legislation needs to be wrote in Washington, D.C. to make sure there is never another time when one person can literally hold our military at bay. This is un-American for him. And it's absolutely, you know, we every single person in Washington, D.C., Republican or Democrat, should be livid at Tommy Tuberville right now. He is using our military as his gang, and we're not a gang.
But he said it has nothing to do with national security. He said this doesn't,
yes, it does.
Do anything.
Yes, it does. It absolutely is placing us at risk. You know, he's not thinking this through. He doesn't understand. Imagine that you spent your whole military career. You've got 30 plus years in the military. You are literally ready to cross over into the general ranks. You've got multiple combat deployments under your belt. You know, you've done everything. You've attended every single school, and you're literally ready to take up, you're ready to assume the duties and responsibilities, but you can't because of one guy who is playing these games, you know, and this is not the thing. This is not the way we do it. This is un-American for Tommy Tuberville. He is an absolute joke. And once again, this has to be, if there's not legislation that is created after this to make sure that somebody like him can never do this again, then absolutely something is wrong in Washington, D.C.
Well, this is where, again, I come back to the people who voted for him. You know, this is where we're supposed to, again, we love the military. We talk about it all the time. We've got photo ops and all kinds of things. This is supposed to be where we throw the bum out. And I say, look, you know, I've said for years, this guy's the dumbest guy in the Senate. He's doing this for a reason, and it's got nothing to do with abortion. Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah, he's just trying to be, he's trying to have his way. But at the end of the day, you know, this is, I guarantee you, you know, these are the type of people that will knock down their grandmother to get a picture with the veteran coming off of an airplane who's been in the Middle East for a year. You know, they love veterans when it benefits them. They love veterans when they get to take photographs. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, every single veteran in Tommy Tuberville's state should be livid at him right now. They should be writing him. They should be lighting him up and letting him know that there will never be another opportunity for him to ever win another race if he doesn't fix what he's done wrong here. And this is absolute garbage. Yeah, our soldiers deserve better.
The other part of this is, and you talk about national security, the other part of this is this shows weakness across the globe. I mean, this shows how, you know, our differences, you know, will magnify, you know, and, you know, it used to be we fought and everything stopped at the water's edge. This is much bigger than that. So I've only seen one Republican come out, this Michael McCall, a Republican from Texas, who said it's paralyzing our Defense Department, what Tuberville's doing. He's really the only person I've seen who's come out and said anything about this.
Yeah, everybody on the Armed Service Committee should be livid right now. They should be coming out and speaking out. You know, I mean, you are absolutely right. This shows people all across the globe that we're really not as solid as we have always tried to promote us being. You know, it shows that we've got issues. And once again, if nothing is done to make sure it never happens again, I mean, it literally makes people think twice about, you know, our national security. And you know, I would tell you, the Republican Party that absolutely championed Donald Trump and continues to do the things, they don't even understand that we cannot keep going down this path. We cannot have people in Congress. We cannot have a person occupying the highest seat of the land that has no morals and no values. We cannot have a commander in chief that literally is willing to steal classified documents and probably sell them. I mean, you know, and what's sad is that these Republicans, they should be begging for forgiveness right now. And instead, this is the kind of garbage that they're trying to push. You know, I'm just sickened at Jim Jordan and his actions and Tommy Tuberville. This is absolutely, they look at this as a game. And let me tell you something, what they are doing right now is affecting people's lives. It's affecting not just the military, it's affecting their families. It's affecting everything.
Yeah, it's in particular our national security. I'm with you. But yep. Rich, I appreciate the thoughts. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon. Thanks so much, buddy.
Anytime, brother. Always, man. I appreciate you.
Our good friend Rich O'Jett. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. We're talking.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, this Tuberville thing is just, it's just beyond me. It makes, fight your fight, fight your issue if you have to, but you don't hold the country, you don't hold the country hostage. But again, this is a party that's, has a history of this. Look at the debt ceiling fights, always till the end. Let's go to the phone. We got CJ in Madison on line one. CJ, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call, Rick. You and I have fought a number of times, and I appreciate you taking my call. Don't always agree, and I don't agree with you or your guests, because Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Senate, could bypass these issues in the military from Tuberville, but he wants to politicize it and keep it as an issue. And I hear you always tell only part of the story along with your guests, because when you look back at Iraq, how many UN resolutions did Iraq not comply with the UN and the International Atomic Energy Association? How many resolutions did it take for them not to comply, not let inspectors in? They did use mass destruction, killed 300,000 of his own people.
I said right from the beginning, CJ, that he had weapons of mass destruction. He got them from us. That's how we knew.
And he hit them.
Yeah. Well, they destroyed them. No, they destroyed them years before.
18 resolutions, Rick.
As much as I'm not a fan of Scott Ritter, maybe you should look at his reporting. They didn't find them.
I'll be happy to, but it took 18 resolutions. And finally, George W. said, this is the last chance. We're not going to give you that. They kept, Saddam was not forthcoming, wouldn't let inspectors in, and played the cat and mouse game, and the UN did nothing. And we've now got over 100, our open border, we now have over 100 terrorists that have been on our watch list that are now in our country. And the mere fact that there's maybe more, because we've had 7 million illegals cross during this president's do nothing.
Yeah, I don't know where you're getting that number from. I don't know where you're getting that number from. But CJ, here's the thing. Where we may agree, by going into Iraq, we opened up massive can of worms. I don't know what your position would be, but we destabilized the globe because of this. And for what? For what we already knew. We don't get to see what was shown to our elected officials that got us into going into Iraq. But what we do now know is there was nothing there to be found. So we went in there on a lie and we found nothing, CJ. And that's my problem. And I'm done with this. I appreciate the thoughts, though. Thanks so much. No, this is, again, one of these things. We're going to relitigate the history of what not we now know. There was nothing there. And we didn't. We were told we're going to get bin Laden. There was no connection between bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. There wasn't. But hey, Halliburton made a lot of money. Defense contractors made a ton of money. And this is my problem with again, I go back to that era of talking about Smedley Butler, who I haven't thought about in a bit. And seriously, read, you know, his pamphlet, War is a Racket. The idea that we're going to make rich people richer and poor people dead. And that's what we did. And it's frustrating to go back and think about, you know, where we were as a nation on this day before all of the decisions that were made. It's heartbreaking. Because we chose these people. And no, I'm never going to go along with the idea that Iraq was a good idea. I've yet to find someone who was there who said it was a good idea. And of course they violated UN resolutions. I mean, you think about, you know, what... I go back to H.W. Bush going into Iraq. And this is one of those things I remember in 91. Because I knew people who went there. We were sold on going into Iraq the first time. Again, on a lie. There was a candy striper. Young girl on 60 Minutes. Still remember it like it was yesterday. She was telling the story about how, you know, in Kuwait, she was a candy striper at a hospital and Iraqi soldiers came in and were bayoneting babies and throwing them out of incubators. She went in front of a congressional hearing and told this story. It was heartbreaking. The nation, angry, wanting vengeance. Turns out it didn't happen. She was never there. It turns out she was the daughter of a diplomat. A PR firm came up with the whole thing. It was a sale job. And why were we going into Iraq? Because the Kuwaitis were doing diagonal drilling into Iraqi oil fields. And Saddam went to his buddies, us, and asked, hey, can we stop this? And if you believe what April Glaspie has to say, we said, no, we have no interest. Her exact quote was, reportedly, we have no interest in Arab nation border disputes, which was the green light for Hussein to go into Kuwait. And then, well, we had to go and defend Kuwait because, well, I'm not sure why. And this started that snowball. So our guy, the guy we put into power, now a little chafe over the fact that, you know, he got slapped on the wrist. And Dick Cheney knew, you break it, you buy it. Dick Cheney knew you go in there, you're going to be seen as occupiers and not liberators. Dick Cheney knew. Did it anyway. Why? Lots of profits for Halliburton. And we went in thinking, hey, it's going to be that 2-week, you know, fun and sun on the beach. It's going to be over in no time. How many lives did we lose? How much treasure? How much blood and treasure were spilled? Again, over a lie. And this is where I keep coming back to this. And you read Richard Clark's book where he talks about all of the failures that led up to allowing 9/11 to happen. The August 6th presidential daily briefing that evidently Bush must not have read. Because he didn't know that anyone would attack, you know, buildings with planes, except the one he was in Georgia, where they thought someone was going to attack the hotel he was in with a plane. But never mind. Don't let reality get in the middle of all that, because we got UN resolutions again, a UN, and I love when people who generally bash the UN for being toothless and worthless, then you go, see, the UN resolutions. Cripe's sake. I'm curious your thoughts. Was it worth it? Was it worth going into Iraq? Was it mission accomplished? Was the big banner and the sock in the drawers with the flight suit, was that all that worth it? Because we've done exactly what most people predicted, and I too. We haven't taken care of the people who are suffering from that. And no, I don't believe Schumer has the ability to go over Tuberville. But here we are. I do find it interesting, though, that there are still defenders of Tuberville. That's quite remarkable to me, and especially on this day. I do want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. A lot more to get to. Quick break, right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1851. That was the day that a Maryland planter named Edward Gorsuch was killed in Christiana, Pennsylvania. Gorsuch had come to Pennsylvania to try and recapture three black men that had escaped from slavery on his farm outside of Baltimore 2 years earlier. A year after the men escaped, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act. This penalized helping those who had escaped slavery with a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. Emboldened by the law, slave catchers chased those who had made the journey to freedom in the North. Gorsuch received news that the men he was looking for were in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Two of the escaped slaves were at the farm of William Parker, a black man who had also escaped slavery in Maryland. Located just north of the Mason-Dixon line, Lancaster had a well-established Underground Railroad network. An armed black self-defense group had developed to stand against the slave catchers. Gorsuch and his son gathered a group of men and headed north. At the Parker farm, they were confronted by a group of at least 50 black men armed with guns and pitchforks. Gorsuch refused to leave, and a gun battle erupted. Gorsuch was shot and killed in the exchange of fire. Parker, his family, and the three formerly enslaved men fled to Canada. 38 others who were there that day were charged with treason for taking part in the confrontation. This included Castor Hanway, a white man who had tried to defuse the standoff. None of the charged were ever convicted. In the South, slave owners were outraged that no one was punished. Tensions between the North and South sharpened. As a result, the country moved closer to the Civil War, the bloody conflict that finally ended slave labor. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter @laborhistoryin2.
Last week, I talked about how Labor Day was created in the 1880s by rebellious workers. But I'm celebrating the spirit again this week because a momentous new energy has been building in today's union movement. Indeed, renewed union rebelliousness has put labor back in Labor Day. Previously cast as a day off, it's now a day on, rallying working-class activism and celebrating nationwide strikes by such disparate groups as Teamsters and Hollywood actors. This is making the corporate bosses very antsy, for it's the harbinger of a new order that is undermining absolutist boss rule. Particularly alarming to the plutocratic establishment is the new aggressiveness of the United Auto Workers Union under their recently elected grassroots president, Sean Fain. Tossing aside the old willingness to accept incremental changes in contract negotiations, Fain began the current bargaining round by literally throwing the industry's proposal in the wastebasket, bluntly declaring that's where it belongs. Such honesty has spooked Detroit's auto barons, who are wailing that the workers' demands are, quote, excessive. This from pampered CEOs, each pocketing between $20 and $34 million a year in personal pay. Pathetically, the corporate establishment has no better retort to Fain than to try its tired old Red Scare bugaboo. This man studied Trotsky, squealed one squeamish corporatist on TV. No. Instead, Sean Fain has clearly studied Walter Reuther, Mother Jones, Fighting Bob La Follette, Frederick Douglass, Cesar Chavez, and other American champions of economic fairness and social justice. This is Jim Hightower saying, the big story here is not that a president of one workers' organization is shaking things up, but that organized workers themselves are on the move, demanding economic democracy.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So clearly, being 9/11, today I have been thinking about my next guest all day long. And we've had this conversation a number of times, and unfortunately, we're going to have it again. Because every September 11th, I call for Congress to open up all of the stuff that they showed to people like my next guest. So we all get to see what was on display. That's why I've asked my good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So let's get to this. Thoughts on this terrible anniversary?
I mean, I was to be in the World Trade Center that day, and because of my friend and your friend, Ellen Ratner, I didn't go. I changed the date to the week before. But I ended up in the Capitol and was part of the, you know, evacuation. Actually ordered it with the Assistant Sergeant of Arms for the House. And, it's a traumatic day for the whole country and for the people, the staff that worked there and fleeing for their lives, knowing that a plane was headed there within 14 minutes. The brave Capitol Hill police that stayed and made sure everybody got out. It was a day of trauma for this country. And we just won't forget it.
Yeah, I mean, and it led to all of the events that came afterwards. And yeah. I argue led to a lot of the divisions that we are suffering through right now in this country. And, you know, one of the things we've talked about extensively over the years is, what you were shown and how you want to be able to tell us what was shown. Why can't we know that?
Well, and I did an interview today, Rick, and I separated into two parts. One, what happened in the Capitol, what we did afterwards working with Steny Hoyer, who was until last year the number two Democratic member in the House, and no politics. We all worked together, you know, to do something. That was the one thing I talked about. The other thing I talked about was the aftermath politically, legislatively, the aftermath. And we can go down a list of things: Homeland Security, the temporary Homeland Security Committee that became permanent, the Patriot Act, the Great Patriot Act, which was unbelievable within itself. Don't let an emergency that happened in the country go unused. You know, use it to try to spy further on the American people. But the two biggies: one, you know, the entire release of the report. What happened? You know, where were the Saudis? What was the influence? Released a report that the Justice Department under Bush at the time said that, they checked it all out. Well, okay, let's see it. What did you check out? You know, who was cleared? But then the biggie of all, which was the fear, the aftermath, what was going on in the country, the corporate media bought into it, groups pushed for information that was not credible. And then we were shown information, which I spoke about this today, Rick, and you and I spoke about this maybe on 10 or 14 anniversaries, I guess. Why can people not know what I saw and others saw? Why can they not know what we saw? And those people that showed us that material, they need to be drug in and asked, who above you authorized you to give this material as fact of law, as a fact that, you know, the Congress needed to do something? Who did that? Who commissioned it? Who was involved? That's what needs to happen. It hasn't happened. It probably will happen 40 years after I'm off this planet. Maybe.
How long has it been since Kennedy?
Kennedy, right, 63. True.
And this is the frustrating part of this. And I think this should be universal. This should not be partisan. This is one of, on this day, this is one of those things that I call for every year. I want that transparency.
Well, exactly. You know, I would like to know the people that gave us this information. I'd like to know, again, where did they get it? Why was it vetted and found to be accurate when we know now it wasn't? There weren't weapons of mass destruction. We went into an entire war with the loss of American lives, the loss of Iraqi lives, invading a country. Over what?
But Bob, yeah, I just had someone remind me that, you know, Hussein didn't listen to UN resolutions.
Oh, well, let's put it this way. And I'm not saying we should do this, but I always compare this. When members of Congress, and the way I answer this is that if there was a vote I could ever go back and take back, it would be that one. People say, well, isn't the worst thing Jack Abramoff scandal? No, the worst thing was that vote. And I would like to be able to go back in time and realize that we were being lied to. That's number one. But number two, when members of Congress answer, well, Saddam was a bad guy. Well, you know what? I think that the premiers of China are worse. I really do.
I do too.
In a lot of ways. Let's go in. Why didn't we invade Beijing? If we're going to start going after bad guys, let's go to Beijing tomorrow.
Kim Jong-il at the time.
Oh, yeah. Let's throw him in since you're in that area of the world. Sure.
Yeah, I come back to this moment and this day, this anniversary, you know, I'm hoping at some point becomes a unity thing as opposed to what sadly we've seen. We've seen this be used as what divides us.
Right. And again, you know, people say, well, it's done. It's the past. Well, we're going to repeat that mistake at some point in time if we don't know how to look at reality, factual information, and how this all goes down. Until we know that, I would like to know, we are not going to learn the lesson of history.
Yeah. And the Patriot Act and all the things that came after that are still in place. All the,
of course.
And this is, again, this is where we should all universally say, okay, we're beyond this now. Let's move past it. Let's undo that overreach. Let's undo that terrible stuff.
Sure, and it can, and they can do it. And you know, admit they made a mistake, admit they were duped. Find out how you were duped, and throw it out there. There's nothing wrong with transparency on these issues, nothing at all. Oh, is there some embarrassment? Maybe, I don't know. Is that why the Kennedy assassination can't be entirely released? Because there's embarrassment there. It's not national security; it's embarrassment.
Yeah. Speaking of national security, we still have hundreds of military people not getting promotions, not moving up the chain of command. And I look at what Tommy Tuberville is doing. I find, especially on this day, I find it disgraceful. But is there anything that can be done? I've been told here recently that Chuck Schumer can override all of this, and Chuck Schumer can move this stuff right along. Can he?
Well, here's what has to happen. I'm going to disgust myself when I use the word nuclear option. You know, this is the hyper media of the press of D.C. Well, the Senate's going to use the nuclear option. Well, isn't this a profile in courage? They're going to use the nuclear option. You know what the nuclear option means? You vote like you should in a democracy. 51 votes. You have 100 people, 51 passes. That's the nuclear option. And what they ought to do is nuke the whole thing and just stop this nonsense where one senator, because this happened, this is the Republican side, one senator of any party can do what Tuberville's doing. Tuberville is holding back hundreds of people that need to be in key positions within our military, hundreds of people, not just the head one or two, hundreds. And it just ought to be stopped. I mean, they just...
So what I'm hearing you say is you're talking about ending the filibuster.
Well, sure. I've been against cloture and you know, if you want to filibuster, stand up and, you know, talk about things. They use the cloture rule, you know, where you've got to have the 61. You have to have, the 60 votes. You have to have it. Why? That's not in the Constitution. And you know what I would love to see? This would be beautiful. Both Schumer and McConnell could get a gold star for this one. It would be nice to end it now, but let's say Schumer and McConnell make a deal. They hold a vote, and they hold a vote tomorrow within the Senate, and they undo the cloture vote, and it takes effect after the next election. So, you know, you don't know who's running the Senate. Might be Republicans, might be Democrats. After the next election, if they don't want to do it while they're all sitting there, do it after the next election. Do something, you know, productive.
Yeah. Or do it, or you know, 5 years down the road where you don't know where anything's going to be.
Yeah, right. 5 years. Sure. It wouldn't matter. And that would be a wonderful thing to do, because this needs to end. And the fact that one senator can do this to an entire government is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
And obviously he's not getting enough pressure from his home state.
Yeah, or from his own party. I mean, again, you know, I look at on this day especially, where Republicans and Democrats too, but Republicans for the most part have wrapped themselves in the flag and gotten every photo op they could possibly get with people in uniform, especially overseas. Why aren't they screaming at Tuberville, going, "Hey, have your fight on a different field, not this one"?
Right, right.
Yeah. But again, you know, there's a lot of things we should be ending. You know, the filibuster being one of them. And, oh, let's not forget, you know, the government shutdown we may be careening towards at any moment because, well, we got a debt ceiling, Bob. We got a debt ceiling.
Well, first of all, one of the greatest things that I thought, well, one of the only things I thought when McCarthy became speaker that was good, that was in there, was not the fact that one person can take the speaker out, that's ridiculous, but the fact that they were going to go back to the appropriation bills one by one. I thought, here we go. You air it all out. You air it out line by line. Citizens get to hear things. Right now, anyone listening to this show, your option is to say to, you know, your member, you know, don't do or do the either one, the continuing resolution. When they do these one by one, they have to start to debate every issue within every line item within every agency. And you have a chance as a citizen to say, I know you've got, you know, Head Start's coming up. I want to support Head Start. You know, and they've got to go line by line, item by item. The way they're doing this, they just put the whole thing together. They punt it down the road for 3 months, 4 months, eventually 1 year because it's an election year. That's what they do. Now, the Republicans promised to not do it that way. They promised to do item by item. That promise is broken. They only did what? One? Did they do one bill, was it?
I think it was
one. I can't even remember what it was. They did one bill. And they should have done, I think they had...
But that's a lot of work, Bob.
Well, it is. Exactly.
It's a lot of work.
True. That's true. They'd have to put, they would have to stop the circus atmosphere and the theatrics. Marjorie Taylor Greene would actually have to stop some of the circus theatrics and actually look at a few things that are going on the floor. Well, she'll still find a way to do it. But
you mean like calling for Southern states to secede from the Union?
Something like that? Right, right. So they've broken that promise, and now they're up against the wall. So the Speaker is going to have to do two things. One, be sensitive to passing something on a continuing basis that the Democrats will like in the House and the Senate. He's going to have to do it. Otherwise, guess what happens again? Yeah, it comes to a halt. That's what would happen. It would come to a halt.
Yeah.
So he's got to craft something that he's going to get some Democrat votes on, because he's going to lose probably, I don't know, 20 to 25. He won't lose much over that, but he's going to have to do something with the minority leader to be able to get votes.
Did you see this story with this former Republican representative, Denver Regelman? Did you see,
no.
Did you see this story with him where he's talking about, and it's over at HuffPost, he's talking about how the first time he met his colleagues in the House Freedom Caucus. And it's one of these things where, you know, he said it blew his mind at you know, the ridiculous claims that came out of these people. And he said it was the first time he had ever heard the conspiracy theory of a one world algorithm that evidently these House caucus people were saying was, you know, was to shut down conservative speech on all social media, which according to this guy is impossible. But he said, quote, "I'm sitting here in my first Freedom Caucus meeting as my head explodes thinking, how did these individuals get elected? He said the old saying is, it takes you 6 weeks to figure out how did all these other people get around me to get elected. Well, it took me 6 minutes. Because you know all of the crazies are in one caucus, which is my congressman Scott Perry being the head of the Kook caucus. It's kind of interesting that he pointed this out.
Right now he's out of there. He was from Virginia, right?
Yes. Virginia.
Yeah, he was from Virginia, right? And he was actually he had something to do with the House Select Committee that was probing January the 6th.
Correct.
I think, yeah, right. So, if he's saying that he went in there and there was conspiracy theories, I would buy that they probably promote them. They come up with all kinds of things, algorithms, this and that. I had somebody working on my property one time who didn't work by the end of the day, working on my property one time that was part of a group, and he said, now I know that they take lunch breaks and they drink children's blood in the Capitol. And of course, you know me, so I responded, no, they do it at dinner break. They don't do lunch break. No, it's dinner. Get it straight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, no, that doesn't happen. No, I was out there. No, it doesn't happen. Then by the end of the day, I'm like, okay, we finished that project. I won't need you tomorrow. I actually heard this from somebody.
No, it's like all of those things that are out there. And I use you as the example because... if you serve one term, I had someone tell me you serve one term of Congress, you get health care and pension for life. I'm going, no, that's not true. I have a friend who was there for years, didn't get health care and pension for life.
Right. Yeah. My heart attack that I'm still paying for. Believe me, I didn't get it. Well, I had a relative that was circulating that. And I called her up and I'm like, will you quit circulating that? You know, the congressional kids get free college. I mean, all these things that. I think I looked at the 16 or so items there, and there was one that I had actually approved myself when I chair House Administration, where you could offer, you could use your congressional account if you hired somebody and they worked X amount of time to help them with some of their student loans, you know. But beyond that, there was nothing that was accurate in those. And they circulate around and people believe them.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, but it's like anything. If it's enough repetition, enough people are saying it from enough different angles, and this is what the right understands masterfully, they saturate people's minds with BS, then people, you know, hey, you know, you want to know stuff. So you learn by osmosis and boom, you take it at face value. And here we are with people believing that some of the most ridiculous, outrageous stuff.
And if members of Congress are promoting it, in the congressional caucus, what do you expect?
Yeah. Well, they had to get elected by somebody.
Right.
Scary stuff. Mm-hmm. But Bob, as always, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thank you,
thanks for sharing your memories on 9/11.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. Today in labor history, we pause to remember the events that took place on the morning of September 11th. The year was 2001. Terrorists hijacked planes and intentionally crashed them into the Twin Towers in New York City and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. Nearly 3,000 people were killed in the attack, including 634 union members. They were members of the fire and police unions that had responded to help those at the scene of the attack. They were also pilots and flight attendants on the crashed planes. 343 firefighters died on that day. It was the deadliest firefighter disaster in U.S. history. Before September 11th, the greatest loss of firefighters in an urban building collapse fire occurred in Chicago in 1910. 21 firefighters were killed while fighting a fire in the stockyards. 11 years after the September 11th attack, Harold Schattenberger of the International Association of Firefighters recalled their sacrifice. At the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, our members gave everything they had. The best that this union and this nation have to offer was demonstrated in their courageous response. In the aftermath of September 11th, the Firefighters Union worked to improve benefits and protections for their members and their families.
In particular, the Uniformed Firefighters Association Local 94 and Uniformed Fire Officers Association Local 854 lobbied Washington officials on these issues. In 2010, President Barack Obama signed the James Zagroda 9/11 Health and Compensation Act into law. The act was named after a police officer who developed a fatal respiratory disease while working at recovery efforts at Ground Zero. The act provided medical monitoring and treatment to World Trade Center responders. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Number of emails from folks telling me where they were on this day, and thank you for your stories. You know, again, it's all the same stuff, the vivid memory. And here's the weird thing. I got like 15 emails from people all saying the exact same thing. What a beautiful day it was. A picturesque day, Norman Rockwell kind of beautiful day. You know, all of these, it's ingrained in our memory. And there's part of me that goes, it was such a horrible tragedy that we had to find something positive. And I remember it as, you know, it was, I think Will Bunch had one of the most beautiful days he'd ever seen. And I'm going, you know, I remember beautiful days before. But that one sticks in our minds because I think of just how terrible everything was that day. TB from Santa Fe, you know, points out that, you know, like me, you had a relative in the hospital. And, you know, they write that I'm correct. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. He says I had a huge argument with a friend who felt that it didn't matter, that we needed to send a message. I asked her what message, that we could bomb, you know, whoever, the, you know what, whatever, whenever we're mad. She answered that Saddam was a bad guy. And I reminded her, as I said, the U.S. put him in power to poke a stick at the Shah of Iran. She later joined the FBI to fight terrorism. Our friendship has never been the same. War, he says, doesn't just destroy the targeted enemy. It destroys those of us at home as well. And every war leaves more damaged soldiers behind that our government simply kicks to the curb. That has always been my fear. And I've said this before, you know, before we get into these adventures, you should be putting that money aside for what's coming. They finish up with, in addition to all the discarded machines of war making it into our police force, example, Santa Fe is a sanctuary city. Does it really need a Bearcat SWAT Hummer? I don't know. You know, I live in a small town. They got a tank. And you know, we talked earlier about Cop City in Atlanta and wanting to build that. As Iraq and all that was going on, I was talking about the crowd control techniques that they were going to eventually bring home. And what we got is we got kettling. We got all kinds of stuff. And overseas, lots of toys. You know, the goodbye gun that sends electric waves at you. It's like a taser, only like a ray gun. Makes you feel like you're on fire. Sound cannons and all kinds of fun toys. Because eventually, when authoritarianism finally takes over, and I view Trump as an authoritarian, and across the globe, what we're seeing is the rise of authoritarianism. When that happens, these things that they're putting in place comes for all of us, and eventually everyone is in the shark tank. Eventually everyone is the flavor of the month. So this isn't, oh, they're going after somebody I don't agree with. This is eventually all of us. So I appreciate everyone sharing their thoughts on this day. No, I'm not gonna finish up on that. I do want to thank my good friend Max Burns today. He invited me to come on. He was guest hosting for Dean Obadala over on Sirius XM, and we had an opportunity to talk some big labor issues. So if you want, check out Dean Obadala's show from today. You'll find my part of it. I know he puts out a podcast, and because I think, you know, this week we're gonna spend a lot of time talking about
about labor issues as the UAW and the contract talks with the big three automakers ticks down to the deadline of midnight the 14th. Will there be a big strike across the country? Will we see auto workers in the streets? Or will they get somewhere near the 46% pay increases that they're demanding? And again, that number comes...
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.